afternoon. I'd like to call the meeting of the Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:30 p.m. on Tuesday, March 7th, 2023. Present today, Vice Chair Senator Klayman, Senator Merrick, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Bjorkman, myself, Chair Kawasaki. Before we start, please silence your cell phones. I want to remind members and testifiers that all questions and comments must be directed through the chair. And before testifying, please clearly state your name, your title, and your affiliation for the record. With us today from Senate Records is Carrie Cooperrider, and Zachary Lawhorn is our moderator with the Legislative Information Office. Thanks for being here. The purpose of today's meeting is to hear two election bills. They will be held, and this is going to be the first of several meetings. Senate Bill 19 is related to elections and ballots, sponsored by myself. Senate Bill 1 is short title, Elections, Ballots, Voting, Security, sponsored by Senator Schauer. I'll give an introduction of today's bill, Senate Bill 19, and then request my coworker, Matt Longabaugh, and staff to Senator Tobin, Mike Mason, to read a sectional, answer any questions folks might have today. We're going to try and make testimony brief and questions also brief and after they're finished with their sectional analysis. So I'm just going to speak from here instead of going up to the front, but if you guys want to join. So the purpose of Senate Bill 19 is to modernize Alaska's election system, sort of build on the successes of the 2020 and 2022 election cycles. There's three major ways that we can do that, that I see that we can do that. Removing barriers to the ballot box, ensuring that voters are able to register, get registered, and then get verified, and that we ensure election security and integrity. Senate Bill 19 has several items, among others, an automatic renewal for absentee voting, ballot tracking system, signature verification, and ballot curing process for absentee ballots, a section on prepaid return postage for mail-in and by-mail absentee ballots, and a requirement for the Division of Elections to inform voters if something went wrong with their ballot, all codified in law. So that's all my brief opening remarks, and I'd like to next turn to Matt Longabaugh, my coworker for Senate Bill 19. Do you want to just briefly introduce the bill and then go to the sectional?
Sure, that sounds good. Read through the sponsor statement.
For the record.
Yes, for the record, this is Matt Longabaugh, staff to Senator Scott Kawasaki. Thank you all for being here today, and why don't I just get into it? So over 360,000 Alaskans voted in the 2020 election, making it the election with the greatest participation in Alaskan history. Yet 173,000 Alaskans were eligible to vote or registered to vote but did not. Senate Bill 19 seeks to build on the participatory success of the 2020 election by strengthening the voter registration system, paying postage for by-mail ballots, and requiring the Alaska Division of Elections to offer absentee voters the option to fix errors in their ballots. This bill facilitates participation for those legally eligible to vote and ensures the integrity of elections by updating absentee ballot verification and curing. Currently, voters are not notified of errors in their absentee ballots until after the election is certified. Over 7,500 ballots were rejected in the 2022 special primary election. That's about a 5% rejection rate, 1 in 20 ballots, which means on average somebody in this room's ballot was rejected. Voters still must fill out a formal application every year. While Alaska has a permanent absentee voter list, it is authorized by regulation, not statute. The current list is reserved for those who live in very rural areas, the disabled, and persons who live in institutions that serve elders or those with a disability. Moreover, those on the list don't automatically receive an absentee ballot, just an application for the ballot. This bill requires the state to pay return postage for by-mail absentee ballots. It requires the Division of Elections to provide an option for each absentee voter to permanently receive the absentee ballot unless that voter should not vote in a period of 4 years or the absentee ballot were returned to the department as undeliverable. The bill also requires each voter to sign the ballot. That signature needs to match that voter signature in the voter registration database using signature comparison software, and the election workers comparing signatures are required to be trained in the use of that software. The bill also establishes a ballot tracking system and ballot curing process. The ballot curing process requires the division to notify voters if the signature on the ballot does not match the one in the registration. This bill allows family members, caregivers, election officials, postal workers, or volunteers from nonpartisan nonprofit organizations to deliver ballots to drop-off locations and establishes a clear, deliver ballots to drop-off locations. As we all know, voting rights are fundamental to American democracy, which works best when eligible voters can participate and have the freedom to choose our elected leaders. Expanding and broadening the ability for all eligible Alaskans to vote ensures that these freedoms and rights prevail. We respectfully urge your support of Senate Bill 19. Please reach out to the office with any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Longbaugh. And next we have Mike Mason, staff to Senator Tobin. Welcome.
Through the chair, my name is Mike Mason. I'm staff to Senator Lukey Gale Tobin. Just a brief background, I was staff to Representative Chris Tuck, who is one of the invited testifiers, and I've spent the past nearly 4 years working on election reform legislation, including many of the provisions that are in this bill. So I'll just briefly go through the sectional analysis, if that's okay.
Proceed.
Okay, I'll try to be as quick as I can to get to the invited testimony. So Section 1 of the bill amends AS 1520-030, requiring the Division of Elections to include a postage-paid return envelope with absentee ballots. Section 2 amends AS 1520-081, adds a new subsection M that requires an absentee ballot application to include an option for a voter to choose to receive absentee ballots by mail for future regularly scheduled state elections. The new subsection stipulates that the director of the Division of Elections may not require a voter to reapply to receive an absentee ballot by mail unless the voter has not received an absentee ballot for a period of 4 years or the voter's previous absentee ballot was returned as undeliverable. The voter has not voted an absentee ballot for a period of 4 years. Section 3 amends AS 1520-203A, to require the district absentee counting ballot counting board to determine whether the signature on the certificate is consistent with the signature in the voter registration records. This is the signature verification that was mentioned a moment ago. Section 4 amends AS 1520-203B. It stipulates that an absentee ballot may not be counted if the signature on the certificate is inconsistent with the voter's signature in voter registration records. And then moving on to Section 5, it amends AS 1520-203 by adding a new subsection that allows the District Absentee County Board to conduct a signature verification on absentee ballot envelope certificates. The Division of Elections is required to develop regulations for the use of signature comparison software. Moving on to Section 6, it amends AS 1520, and it adds a new section requiring the Division of Elections to establish a free online system on the Division website through which a voter may track the sending, the delivery, and the receipt of the voter's absentee ballot. The ballot tracking system must also detail if that absentee ballot has been reviewed and counted. Additionally, the ballot tracking system must detail the reason the absentee ballot was not counted. That online system must also indicate the process to cure a ballot if the signature on the absentee ballot envelope certificate was missing or was determined to not match the signature in the voter registration records. The new Section 1520.221 also stipulates that the online system established under A of this section must allow an election official to access the names and the political affiliations of all persons named on the master register, including a person whose voter registration is inactivated and whose names are placed on the official registration list under AS 1507070C or D. Those statutes govern registering to vote by mail and in person. In establishing the online ballot tracking system, the Division of Elections is required to ensure that system is designed to allow a voter to access information easily through a mobile electronic device, which you should have muted before the meeting. started today. Section 1520.222 establishes a cure procedure where a voter whose ballot is rejected due to a defect with the certificate envelope must be notified of the defect and also provided an opportunity to cure that ballot defect by providing identification and a signature within 14 days after Election Day. The Division of Elections shall, within 48 hours, but in no event later than 2 days after Election Day, send a notification of the deficiency by first-class, non-forwardable mail and by electronic mail if the voter has provided an email address. The notice of deficiency must include a form for that voter to confirm that the voter returned a ballot to the Division of Elections, provide a copy of a form of identification accepted by the division, also provide a signature for verification. A voter's rejected ballot may not be counted if that voter does not return the form received under B of this section within 14 days after Election Day. If a voter returns the form and indicates the voter did not return a ballot, then the Division of Elections shall, if applicable, send copies of the signature on the voter absentee ballot envelope certificate and the signature stored in voter registration records to the Attorney General for investigation. Additionally, the Division of Elections is required to update the signature stored in voter registration records if the voter provides a copy of an acceptable form of identification and provides that signature. The new subsection stipulates that an election official may not determine that the signature on a voter's return envelope does not match the signature stored in the voter registration record solely on the substitution of initials or the use of a common nickname. The Division of Elections is required to provide training and signature comparison and the use of signature comparison software to election officials who compare signatures under this section. Just to elaborate just a little bit, so my name is Michael Mason, but I refer to myself as Mike, and I often sign as Mike. This would prevent the Division of Elections from ruling my signature as not valid. Section 7 amends AS 1556035A to provide that a person commits the crime of unlawful interference with voting in the second degree if the person knowingly possesses a ballot that is provided to another voter under this title, unless that person is a family member of the voter, caregiver of the voter, engaged in official duties as an election official, or as a worker for the U.S. Postal Service or a private commercial delivery service. The exemption to the crime of unlawful interference with voting in the second degree also applies to those collecting a ballot on behalf of the charitable or educational organization in the state of Alaska that is exempt from taxation under 26 U.S.C. 501c3, Internal Revenue Code, and is a registered voter or an employee of the organization. We are almost done. Section 8 repeals AS 1520.203J, AS 1520.207K, and 1520.211F, which all govern the free system to allow voters to check to see whether the voter's absentee ballot was counted or partially counted. This is because Section 6 of this Act amends AS 1520 to add the new section requiring the Division of Elections to establish the free online system on the Division website through which a voter may track the sending, delivery, and receipt of the voter's absentee ballot. Section 9 amends the uncodified law of the state of Alaska by adding a new section providing that the amendments to AS 1556035A governing the crime of unlawful interference with voting in the second degree applies to offenses committed on or after the effective date of the Act. Section 10 amends the uncodified law of the state of Alaska to add a new section. It permits the Alaska Division of Elections to adopt the necessary regulations to implement the changes in the Act. And then a Section 11 allows Section 10 of this Act to take effect immediately. Section 12 stipulates that the Act takes effect on January 1, 2024. And we can take questions, and we also have invited testimony from Barbara Smith Warner. She is the new executive director of the National Vote at Home Institute. We also have Amber McReynolds on Teams. She is a leading expert on election administration and policy, and she was appointed in 2021 by President Biden to serve as the governor on as a governor on the U.S. Postal Service Board of Governors. And then finally, we have my former boss, Chris Tuck, available, who is going to kind of go through the brief history of all of the election efforts that have been done in the state of Alaska. With that, we can take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mason. It's a simple bill, so can I have a motion? No, I'm just kidding. Thank you very much for the two of you. Are there any questions of a technical nature? I did also want to mention that we have a couple folks from the Division of Elections. We have Lori Wilson, the Region 1 Supervisor. Welcome. We also have Carol Beecher, the Division Elections Director. We have two people online, Carol Thompson, the Operations Manager, and Michaela Thompson, the Division of Elections Administrative Operations Manager. So there are some other folks that have some technical expertise, but if there, we do have three people to testify, we have another bill to look at this morning or afternoon. So are there any questions at this point? Oh yeah, Senator Wilikowski.
Just one question for the Division of Elections, if they have a position on the bill or?
For the record, my name is Carol Beecher. I'm the Director of the Division of Elections for the State of Alaska. Through the Chair, Senator Wilikowski, the Division does not take a position on this bill. If it passes, we will fulfill the law.
Thank you. Thank you, Director. Are there any further questions? Okay. At this time, we do have several folks who are invited testimony on behalf of the bill. Let's see. So we did have an introduction of the three folks who are going to be testifying on subject matter. We first have Barbara Smith Warner. Barbara Smith Warner is the new executive director of the National Vote at Home Institute. She's also a former member of the Oregon House of Representatives. And if Barbara would like to introduce herself to the committee, and you have a couple minutes to testify and give some input. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. And can you hear and see me okay?
We sure can.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for having me. For the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I, Chair Kawasaki, Vice Chair Clayman, and members of the committee. I am pleased to join you today as the Executive Director of the National Vote at Home Institute. Our goal is to increase voters' access to, use of, and confidence in voting at home. And I join you today, as was mentioned, both as a resident of Oregon, where we created the first vote at home system and have used it successfully for over 20 years, but also as a former legislator who served in the Oregon House, the lower chamber, from 2014 to 2022. So you've heard a good description of Senate Bill 19, and I'm here, I was gonna walk through kind of the sections just to give you a little background from other states and some of our research that we have about each of those elements. But broadly, we are very supportive of it. We think this is a great bill, and we are excited that Alaska has this opportunity to join many other states in these voting reforms that will both increase voter turnout and election integrity. So for each section, I'm just gonna talk briefly about how it's beneficial for voters, for election officials, and for democracy overall. So today in Alaska, all voters have the option of voting absentee without having to provide an excuse. Senate Bill 19 will give voters the option to move to a permanent absentee, which we generally refer to as single sign-up, where that single request will provide that voter with the ongoing convenience of receiving their ballot by mail for each election. Alaska will join seven other states that use the single sign-up, in addition to the eight states that are fully voted home, where every voter gets mailed a ballot. Also, for your information, both New Mexico and Minnesota are currently considering single sign-up as well this legislative session. So as you've heard, with single sign-up, voters do get that convenience of a ballot delivered to them automatically, with the caveats that were mentioned. It also gives them an important reminder to participate and engage in every election. This is particularly important in local elections, special elections, primaries, where voter turnout is often 2 to 4 times lower than in a general elections, And election officials benefit from saving money and time with this. Today in Alaska, election officials and administrators have to process absentee ballot requests from many of the same voters, election after election, year after year. That duplication is, you know, can really be wasting vital resources that could be directed to other important work. In fact, we have some recent research across multiple states, including Alaska, that revealed that almost 50% of folks who are voting absentee are repeaters, who choose to vote that way over and over. So allowing those folks to the option for single sign-up, the elections officials would have a reduction in paperwork and administrative cost. And it has been proven to be highly secure, as Alaska has seen with its current no excuse policy. And finally, it's good for democracy because we believe very much that anything that reduces friction in the process of elections tends to increase voter engagement and turnout. And allowing voters not to have to keep repeating their absentee request really reduces friction. The last thing I'll say about this is that the turnout impact, you'll see in our written testimony a lot more extensive data, but I just want to point out that the two states that have had the most experience with this, Arizona and Montana, over the last few decades, they now have between 75 and 80% of their general election vote in the 2022 election was cast by ballots that voters received in the mail. And their turnout was a little bit higher than Alaska's. So the next element, the one that I most recently directly, I knew my cat would jump up while I was testifying. I just knew it. Is prepaid postage for absentee ballots. This obviously, it's not only convenient, but it really is easy for voters to understand. Not as many people keep first-class stamps on hand as they used to, and prepaid postage makes it easy to fill out a ballot at home, at work, and simply drop it in the mail. So we live in a society where many voters, especially younger voters, certainly my kids, have less and less interaction with the Postal Service and maybe have never bought a stamp. So this is a simple change that can really increase voter engagement. Just recently in Oregon in 2019, when I was chair of the House Rules Committee, we added prepaid postage to our full vote-at-home system, and the results were immediate and significant to the point that in 2022, for the first time, Oregon had the highest voter participation rate in the country, and we believe that prepaid postage really had a lot to do with that. And then, of course, for elections officials, this streamlines administrative functions inside their offices, from adding the barcodes to the ballot design so the Postal Service can get it through more quickly. And now, if a voter sends in a ballot without postage, the Elections Division still gets charged for the overage, which can lead to unpredictable cost. This is a more budget-friendly way to do it. It's you can budget for it. It's very understandable. And after you first get it in, you will have more predictable usage. So the next element of Senate Bill 19 is the ballot tracking. So today in Alaska, when voters are mailed those absentee ballots, there are very few tools available for them to know the status. Have they gotten? Has it been sent out yet? Was it delivered? Has it been received back to the elections office? And these questions really create anxiety in the minds of voters, which can feed into concerns about the total elections process. But if you think about it, voters don't face those same questions and concern when they order something online, because most shipping vendors, whether it's FedEx or UPS, they allow suppliers to track those easily. Folks know where things are in the process, and it's really important for voters to have that same sense of confidence with the status of their ballot. And the good news on this front is that this problem has been solved already in a number of states, tracking of the ballots, and there's multiple vendors with software available who can provide this service to states and their voters. And also, the response from voters has been really overwhelmingly positive. Research done by Capital Weekly back in 2020 and published by Ballot Tracks showed that 78% of Republicans, 94% of independents, and 97% of Democrats agreed that the ability to sign up for notification of when your ballot was received would give them more confidence in the process. And as far as election officials, obviously, ballot tracking is going to give them a powerful tool to monitor their flow of ballots going out and coming back in. In fact, Denver, Colorado, which was one of the first places to proactively institute ballot tracking as part of their vote-at-home model, they found that calls into their office dropped from about 1 in every 5 registered voters calling in over the course of the election down to about 1 in 20 or 25. That's a huge drop in workload, which frees those folks up for doing other important tasks of elections. And finally, of course, again, this is something that reduces voter anxiety and uncertainty, and that can only be a good thing. We particularly need that now. Some research from the 2022 elections shows that states that used ballot tracking software saw meaningful increases in turnout among the mailed out ballot voters who did sign up to track their ballot versus those who did not. The differences range, we've got information from about 10 states. The differences range from a 6% increase in Colorado to almost 40% in Hawaii. Now, there's likely to be some self-selection bias because if you're going to sign up to track your ballot, you probably have a higher propensity to cast it. But the numbers are still really remarkable, showing that when voters have that greater confidence in their ballot being counted, that the tracking that they get from the tracking software, they really are much more likely to vote. Then get to the last element of Senate Bill 19, the strangely named ballot curing. One thing we know about voters is they want their vote to count. We also know, however, that sometimes they sign their envelope in haste or don't follow the instruction exactly. That was a striking number in the intro, 7,500 votes that were not counted in Alaska in that most recent election. Rather than punishing those voters for a simple mistake, Senate Bill 19 would provide a simple way to cure the ballot's error in a reasonable time and allow that voter's voice to be heard and their vote to be counted. And election officials, of course, they also take great pride in their roles as guardians of our democracy. They too want every legitimate vote to be counted. They also get frustrated when someone's signature changes or they miss an administrative step and that ballot can't be counted. So the ballot curing process, which usually involves contacting the voter and then requiring them to provide additional verification, it really does maintain election security and voter intent to participate. And so, you know, it is also used in 24 other states. So the only suggestion I would make about this bill is that with the strong signature verification that's in place, along with that ballot curing for questionable ballots, the need for a witness on the return envelope really does become redundant. But it also might create some additional friction, you know, keeping folks from using those mailed out ballots. Other states that have put in strong signature verification and curing into place, they have eliminated that witness requirement. And I would suggest that you no longer need that provision as well. And you consider dropping that from the final bill. So in conclusion, these four reforms in Senate Bill 19 would really move Alaska forward into the forefront of policies that are voter-centric, that also improve the work of our elections official and strengthening democracy overall. So I encourage you to pass this bill, and I would be delighted to answer any questions you may have.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Warner. Are there any questions for Ms. Warner at this time? Senator Klayman.
I gather, Ms. Warner, that you spend a fair bit of time looking at this issue nationally. In terms of the signature verification, have any of the jurisdictions that have adopted signature verification encountered any problems with ballot fraud or other issues surrounding signature verification?
Through the chair, thank you for the question, Vice Chair Klayman. No, there is. That is really the a key element. I can get you some more specific data. I'm happy to follow up with that. But I can tell you that verification, it's such a clear it's such a clear way that the number of the programs that do the checking, and then if there's a discrepancy, it's kicked out. So a person does the second check, and then when there is a discrepancy, the default is to reach out to the voter. So really, it actually, the differences that it catches tend to be like what was said in the other introduction, people signing their shortened name instead of their whole name, people whose signatures have changed over time. It has a particular impact on older folks and also younger voters who maybe don't have as much of an established signature and use different ones. So it is definitely a place where fraud could be caught, but in general, it tends to catch errors. Did that answer your question, sir?
Thank you. One follow-up?
Yep, sir.
And how many jurisdictions, not just states, but I know, for example, the municipality of Anchorage has adopted a signature verification. How many jurisdictions, both local and state, have actually adopted signature verification?
Sure. That I will happily find out and send you. As specifically as I can get it.
Thank you.
Through the chair.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Warner. I did have a question. You know, coming from Alaska, we look down at Oregon. Oregon does things a little differently. I don't know if you still have to have somebody pump your own gas or not, but you do the elections. You know, when we looked at elections and we said, oh, wow, all the elections down there are done by mail, and how's that going to work? And then now Alaska's sort of done it, and in Anchorage they do it, the municipality, the largest city in the state of Alaska. Were there any pitfalls or anything that sort of happened along the genesis of having all-mail voting system?
Through the chair, thank you for that question, Chair Kawasaki. You know, clearly I am biased. We have voted completely by mail for, like I said, for over 20 years. We have really not had problems. What we have done is used it as an opportunity to increase, voter engagement. It's been the basis of we've worked on a variety of automatic voter registration, starting with motor voter and then going to an opt-out system. There is work to do it through Department of Human Services interaction. We did prepaid postage. And then once we did prepaid postage, we changed the acceptance date of the ballot having to be received by election day at 8 o'clock to having to be postmarked by election day. So that has it's broadening voter enfranchisement. It's the opposite of disenfranchisement. You know, we also the other thing I'll say is first of all, no lines, no voting lines on that. And also, it really does give people, particularly the other thing that we have here in Oregon is ballot measures. And we will often have a series of ballot measures that can be very confusing. And to me, the thought of having to go into a booth and figure out your, you know, where you are on all of those and that, whereas we have what's called a voter pamphlet that gets sent out about a week to 10 days before you get your voter pamphlet, your ballot, with comprehensive information about every measure on the ballot, every candidate who's running. It's really, it provides so much more, you know, it just provides more ability for voters to really engage and fully understand the issues that they're voting on, the people that they're voting for. So short answer, no, we have not had things come up. It's really been a very successful effort here. And it's, you know, it's gone from the striking numbers in the 2018 election, about 18%, now after the 22 election, over about 35% of voters in the country now voted by ballots that were voted at home. It's really gone up as folks have found it to be easier and more voter friendly.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your time today, Ms. Warner. I appreciate the work that you do, and thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll go ahead and move on to Amber McReynolds. Ms. McReynolds is a leading expert on election administration and policy. She is the former director of elections for Denver, Colorado. She's a founding CEO of the National Vote at Home Institute, which you just heard. She serves on the National Council of Election Integrity and now serves as one of the Board of Governors to the U.S. Postal Service. Welcome to the committee, Ms. McReynolds.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the committee for giving me a few minutes to discuss this bill. First, as mentioned, I have about 20 years, a little over 20 years of experience running elections, not only in Colorado, but also in other states, including presidential primary states in 2020. And I'm also still working on a number of different election issues to improve the process for all voters. I'm also independent, and I say that because one of the approaches that I've always had with regards to election administration is that it should be nonpartisan. Policy and the administration of elections should be completely nonpartisan, with a focus on putting the voters first and improving the voting experience for every single elector. And I believe that some of the reforms that are in Senate Bill 19 match the very best practices around the country that have worked over time. They provide that improvement not only for voters and their experience, but actually the improvement to the operations and the administration side of elections, and also the security and integrity of the election, which I will talk about as some of the points and some of the sections in the bill. It improves the voting experience, it improves operations, it improves the security and integrity. And when you can combine all of those factors into one bill, you certainly are looking at a very positive piece of legislation that will benefit all. It also includes common sense solutions that we know work in various states, whether they're red or blue states. There are examples of every single policy objective in the bill in red states as well as blue states. They're tried and true. This is not new. This is not reinventing the wheel. These are leveraging best practices that have worked in various states. As mentioned earlier as well, one of the benefits of mail ballots broadly, and frankly the reason that they've expanded so much across the country, voters are choosing to vote that way, is because it does give voters more time at home. Voters can be more educated about candidates and the ballot itself. They make less mistakes because they're not rushed in person or in a voting booth when they're marking their ballot. So those are all positive things that we've seen happen with this. I will also point the committee to a resource. I know there was just a question for the last witness. So NCSL actually has what's called a voting outside the polling place link on their website, and it categorizes every one of the issues in Senate Bill 19, but also every single policy issue around mail ballots. It lists out what exactly each state law does. It has even the language, the legislative language, on there. I actually worked with them to design the website in a more friendly way a few years ago. So it has a lot of that information, and I would point the committee to that if you need more on that. First, I want to talk, just go over quickly the four points in the bill and add a little bit of extra information that hasn't been discussed so far. So with ballot tracking, my team designed the first ballot tracking system in the world that ended up being now one of the vendors that provides that software, and about 90 million voters now across the United States had access to that. But Denver started this system back in 2009. That was the first year that we used ballot tracking. Now it has expanded greatly. As I mentioned, over 90 million voters have access to that now in the United States. States like California, Georgia, Nevada, Utah, Colorado, North Carolina, Hawaii, all have implemented statewide systems. And then there's a number of states where local jurisdictions have implemented it. I certainly am a fan of a statewide system so that you have consistency for all voters across the state. It also improves accountability and visibility of mail ballots, which improves the security and the integrity of the process. And this is good for election officials, but it's also certainly good for voters. When you hear people say, we don't know where the mail ballots are, it's actually not true when you have sophisticated tracking technology like this to give voters that extra confidence. And I'll just point out, the former witness mentioned some data points that actually are from my old office, and we did see a decrease in costs because we received less calls from voters asking about the status of their mail ballot when we implemented this. And finally, I'll make one more point on this. You know, any successful business, when they design services like ballot tracking or like better and less bureaucratic processes, they do better as businesses. And this is no different when it comes to running elections. Whatever we can do to improve the process for all of the customers of democracy, all of the voters that participate, regardless of party affiliation, it's better for all, and it certainly improves the system for all. With the single sign-up, so the permanent absentee list, as mentioned, there's a number of states that have used that. It does actually reduce costs. It also improves the process. It provides less bureaucracy for voters. Voters get frustrated when they constantly have to fill out government paperwork, whether it's online or paper records, over and over and over. And so your constituents will really feel more efficiency in their lives when they don't have to keep filling out the same form, when they know they're going to vote using this method each election. So a huge benefit just from an operational and efficiency perspective. The ballot curing process, as I mentioned, that resource on NCSL actually lists all the different variances by state. This bill includes the common sense approaches and a lot of the best practices that are considered gold standard around the country. And I'll just point out, again, it increases security and integrity of the system. There are actually some examples of many examples, and there's a few in my state of Colorado where the signature didn't match, the election official flagged it, and that person got prosecuted for doing that. In fact, one of our former chairmen of one of the two major parties actually attempted to return his mail ballot in 2020 for his ex-wife who had moved out of his house. She didn't update her address. The ballot went there. He tried to sign her signature, and the clerk caught it and turned it over to the authorities, and he got charged with fraud. The ballot was never counted, but they caught it in the signature verification process and he was charged. Another instance in Colorado in 2020, and that instance was 2016, I believe, and the 2020 instance, there was another man that attempted to turn in his wife's ballot. Sadly, she actually had gone missing a few weeks before the election, and he went and turned her ballot in, and the clerk flagged it for the signature not matching, and that piece of evidence actually led to them identifying him as a potential perpetrator of the crime in which she ended up losing her life. So signature verification is known to catch these things before the ballot's counted, before the ballot is cast, and hold people accountable that try to take advantage of the system when they shouldn't be. And there's been other state examples, but I think it's a positive thing when we can catch those things and the system can do its job and catch those issues up front. Finally, on prepaid postage, so this one is, again, a common sense solution. Whatever we can do to eliminate bureaucracy or guessing by the voters, the better. And I want to list some of the states that have prepaid postage so that you can see, again, this is not a red or blue thing. West Virginia, Arizona, Idaho, Indiana, Iowa, California. Those are just some of the states. Oregon was already mentioned. Those are just some of the states that have prepaid postage. And it's more efficient for voters. It's frankly more predictable for election officials. So right now, when voters don't put enough postage on, the election officials get billed back for that because the Postal Service still delivers it and they provide statements back to election officials so they can pay that postage. That's super inefficient, not only on the postage or on the post office's part, but also on the election official side. So this actually streamlines that process, improves it. Then election officials have predictability to plan for that postage, as opposed to now where it varies depending on what voters don't put it on. So I would encourage you to do this. This is, again, a common sense policy initiative that red and blue states have all benefited from and continue to use today. With that, I'll finalize my comments here with just saying that I admire the Mr. Chair, it's your bill, and bringing this back forward, and also the work of Representative Tuck previously, and a lot of these ideas were certainly part of his previous initiatives, and along with other legislators that have worked on these issues over time, because this has really been an accumulation of best practices and legislative language, and your staffs have all worked on this for a number of years to identify the best ways to approach this in Alaska. So it's a combination of that. And these provisions simplify the process, not only for voters, but also for election officials. And that essentially saves and conserves taxpayer dollars. And that's important as we look for ways to improve government efficiency. This bill actually does that through all of its provisions. And I think it's a great move for Alaska across the board for everyone involved. There's no downsides to any of the pieces in the bill. And with that, I'm happy to answer questions.
Terrific. Thank you, Ms. McReynolds. Are there questions of Ms. McReynolds from the committee? Are there questions? Well, Senator, wow, I guess we don't have any questions, but I did want to say thank you very much. I did have a question, and maybe it ought to be directed to the director instead, but the question of postage had come up during this last election cycle in Alaska. One of our ballots, or our ballot system, it was a long ballot. We had a ranked choice vote system this year, and it actually was going to take more than one first-class postage stamp to get it to the Division of Elections. So there was a big question about what happens if there isn't enough or something like that. And I guess your comment, and you might have the experience because you're on the Board of Governors for the U.S. Postal Service, was that you would charge the Division of Elections for the ones that didn't have enough postage. And I guess just wanted a little more clarity on that. Thank you.
Yeah, so the policy of the Postal Service, we never want to see that ballot go back to the voter if it doesn't have enough postage on there. So that's a policy we have. And then what happens is the Postal Service determines what postage is due, and then they'll normally give a statement back to the election official. That's sort of how it works across the country. And it's inefficient because when you prepay, what you would do, and in Alaska uses a vendor to prepare all the mail ballot packets. So you put a business reply indicia basically on there. That actually automates the process further because it's not a manual stamp calculation. It's actually the business reply, and so it can be processed faster. And then you don't have the issue of accounting for any postage due, which can be, you know, time consumptive if voters don't put the correct postage on there. And you just eliminate the guessing by voters as to what, you know, the postage may or may not be, and saves them a trip from having to go to the Postal Service. They can put it in their mailbox for their carrier to come get it. So it just saves, you know, time across the board for everyone involved.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. McReynolds. And I'll say that the Postal Service does a great job up here in Alaska, even at 40 below. Oh, we have one more question from Senator Klayman.
So maybe you can provide some clarity. Last year in some of the discussions when we were discussing some of the different elections bills, the question of the postage came up, and I can't remember who advised me that, but that the post office by statute is required to deliver the ballots. The postage may later charge the Division of Elections, but at least I was, somebody had said that they, the post office actually can't return those. They're required to get it to the division, get it to be counted, and then they may then charge the Division of Elections. But can you provide any clarity on that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. My previous comments were articulating that. So that's not only the policy in the Postal Service, but some states do have laws on the books that also mandate that. So the ballot, we would never return it. In normal cases, we would return a piece of mail that has postage due or notify the recipient potentially that postage was due. But normally that would go back. Our policy is to deliver all election mail because all the mail ballots have the election official logo on it, and that's per the standards of the Postal Service. So the post office knows that, you know, a ballot is in that envelope and will process it accordingly and make sure it gets to the right destination, regardless of postage. So, and then the division ends up paying that postage due, or if it's Anchorage, they would end up paying that postage due back to the Postal Service. So in essence, you know, what we're seeing is states that have those provisions or where that exists, where they're not covering the postage, they actually are paying prepaid postage. They're just not paying it for everybody because they're only, you know, they're covering it for the people that don't put the proper postage on there, but not for everyone. So there's some, you know, some differences there. And then, you know, the other piece I would just say on it quickly is that when you know what the postage is going to be. So business reply, depending on how many piece counts and things like that, it's a set amount. And you know that up front, you can plan for that budgetarily. When you sort of do this other process where it's manual, if they add the postage in and things like that, you lose that predictability. And you end up paying those costs that you could have, you know, just planned for and appropriated on the front end. And I will say that nationally, all of your overseas and military ballots, so currently, and this is in every state because this is under federal law, but the federal government actually pays for the outbound and the inbound postage for all military and overseas voters. So any ballot that's going to a registered UACAVA voter, it's a uniformed and overseas voter, under that act, the Postal Service will actually bill back the Department of Defense each year for that. Now, I think that, you know, taking the good practice that we have there for overseas and military voters, it would be wise for the federal government to consider expanding that to all domestic voters as well to create that efficiency for voters across the country so we don't have variances by state. It would certainly make it easier for the Postal Service because we'd have one indicia to deal with, and we'd be able to bill one entity instead of 30 some thousand like we bill now with the various accounts that election officials have. And frankly, it would provide also some cost coverage from the federal government to states, because right now the burden of running elections, the cost of running elections all falls on the states and the local entities with very little financial support from the federal government at all. And this could be a way for them to help with some of those costs, just like they currently do for uniformed and overseas voters.
Yeah, Senator Klayman, follow-up?
So I appreciate the answer, but I guess I didn't ask the question narrowly enough. Is there a federal regulation or a federal law that requires the Postal Service to deliver the ballots?
To just deliver, like, I'm sorry. So
I'll ask the question in a little more detail.
As opposed to
Just listen a second. Is there a federal law or regulation? What you've testified to, it's the policy that if you get a ballot from Alaska that has one stamp and it should have two, you say it's the policy that they'll deliver that ballot to the Division of Elections and then bill the Division of Elections for the additional postage. My question is there a federal law or a federal regulation existing today that requires that the Postal Service do that?
So some states require it.
No. I'm not asking about states. Federal law or federal regulation.
Okay. So there, we have a postal policy on how we handle election mail. That is delivering the mail to you all and billing you back if you do not have the prepaid postage under state law. Some states have provisions in their state laws that do require us to it's basically documented in their state law in addition to it being a postal policy. The Congress has never passed any legislation around that because it's actually a postal, we can actually have and set that policy as the Postal Service.
All right. Okay. So the chair thinks.
Senator Klayman.
So the chair thinks the answer is no, although it may well be a regulation because it's hard to imagine the Postal Service having any policy that wasn't subject to a regulatory process before it became a policy. The other question I had on the similar, so literally today, we could require no postage, and all that would happen is the division would just get billed for the postage every time a ballot got returned in the mail without a stamp.
So you would, I guess, so you would basically say to voters, don't put stamps on them, but you wouldn't cover the costs, so postal employees to manually calculate, so literally count every single piece and then bill and send receipts to each election office or the division for accounting for that on a daily basis?
That's probably a rhetorical question. Thank you.
Yeah. If you did that, yes, it would require an extensive manual process to calculate the due postage. Since the cost isn't being covered by anybody at that point.
Great. Thank you, Ms. McReynolds, for your testimony. We do appreciate you being able to come online and discuss the process. We do now have Director Beecher in front of us to maybe answer the question that was about whether you were billed.
Carol Beecher, Director of the Elections. So Chair Kawasaki, really my comment goes more to one of the issues that was relayed to me, and I have my expert person on this on the line, Michaela Thompson, but if I'm understanding it correctly, if we were to do the prepaid envelopes, they are handled differently than an envelope that has the correct postage stamps on it. So for the purposes of the ballot tracking, it could impact the ability to do that. So Michaela's online, she could speak to that more directly, but it's just something to think about with the postage issue.
Great. Thank you, Director Beecher. We're sort of running out of time, and we do have one more bill that I'd like to hear, and we have one more person to testify on behalf of this bill. Maybe we can at a future time get those answers. And actually, you will be coming back before the committee, at which time Ms. Thompson might be able to also answer that question. That would be great. Thank you, Director. So finally, we have one more invited guest to testify who is not unknown to this committee. It is the former representative in this former House Representative Chris Tuck. joining us from the Anchorage Legislative Information Office in downtown Anchorage. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for allowing me to speak on behalf of Senate Bill 19. As we just mentioned, I'm Chris Puck. I'm a former legislator of the State House, and I'm speaking here on my own behalf. I have personally ran in 10 elections and have always had a strong interest in elections. As a matter of fact, the first time that I won my state legislature office, I had a lawsuit against me, and I got a chance to pretty much take part in everything that there can be in elections, from dealing with the lawsuit as well as dealing with the election process, because my district was the last one to get counted, and it really determined the outcome of not only my election, but also Senator Begich's election at that time as well. So going through the question ballot process, the absentee review process, and all of those things really kind of gave me a strong foundation on how our election process works and some of the improvements that need to be made. It is amazing to see votes of individual Americans turn into a shared democracy that represents us all. And because of the importance of elections, I worked my entire legislative career just about to make them better. In 2012, I did sponsor legislation to implement a permanent absentee voting system here in Alaska. Unfortunately, that bill only got one hearing. However, it is a good idea, and I tried repeatedly to pass legislation to allow Alaskans to apply once to vote by mail and continue receiving absentee ballots until they miss multiple elections. The first comprehensive election reform bill that I sponsored was House Bill 95 in 2015, and that included same-day voter registration, semi-permanent absentee voting, and a long overdue clarification of what constitutes early voting and what constitutes early absentee voting. There is a confusion about how a person can early vote. And I think the confusion is some of the terms that we use. We have only really three areas that you can early vote, and that's in Anchorage, Juneau, and Fairbanks by definition of early voting. However, we all know that we can vote early by in-person absentee, which is kind of an oxymoron. Like, which is it? Are you in-person or are you absentee? And many Alaskans, and especially in rural Alaska, were turned away from early voting because of misunderstanding of the terms, because many poll workers thought that you needed to be absent to be able to absentee vote. And as with my other efforts at reforming elections, unfortunately, House Bill 95 did not get a hearing, and we never got a chance to vote on that bill. However, I wasn't deterred. I put forward an even larger and more comprehensive election reform bill in 2017. Because I was part of the bipartisan House majority, House Bill 1 got fair hearings, as a matter of fact, 9 in state affairs. And as a result, the bill became a comprehensive election bill, hoping to update a lot of our statutes as we modernize our voting procedures. It was surprising to me to see how many legislators did not really know how our election process worked. And once they did, all sorts of great ideas came out of that. And that bill passed the Alaska House in May of 2017. Unfortunately, the Senate majority at that time did not take up House Bill 1. And so in 2019, I decided to try again to pass a bill to create semi-permanent absentee voting. I just basically focused on that. House Bill 115 passed the House in February 2020 by a vote of 24 to 15. I was confident that I had enough support in the Senate to pass the bill. However, we got struck with COVID. The pandemic basically made the Alaska legislature come to a screeching halt. Prior to the 2021 legislative session, I pre-filed yet another elections reform bill, and that was House Bill 66. And the goal behind that was to modernize Alaska's elections while also removing obstacles to casting a ballot. House Bill 66 had widespread bipartisan support and was improved through an extensive committee process that included 15 hearings and a lot of dialogue with other lawmakers, one of them being Senator Schauer. And we both agreed that we can have better access to elections as well as have more transparency and more accountability. Unfortunately, the House State Affairs Committee took over a year to consider the bill. That entirely avoided delay resulted in the bill not passing before the end of the 2022 session. I have not given up on my goal to improve transparency, accountability, and access to Alaska's elections. So I worked with Senator Kawasaki to develop Senate Bill 19 and hope that At long last, elections reform legislation can pass the 33rd Alaska State Legislature. As we know, elections are the voice of the people. Our representative democracy runs on the feedback of the people through regular elections at every level of government. Elections represent the voice of the people, and the right to vote is essential to that shared democracy. Every Alaskan has one vote. We have great challenges with voting in such a large state for such remote, isolated communities. So we need to make it more convenient for them to cast their vote, because, again, our vote is our voice. On the election reform, the big picture goal behind Senate Bill 19 is to modernize Alaska's elections and build on the success of the 2020 and 2022 elections, when we saw a lot of voting participation that happened, primarily as voting by mail. So Senate Bill 19, as was mentioned before, includes ballot tracking, permanent absentee voting, signature verification and ballot curing for absentee ballots, and prepaid return postage for by-mail absent ballots. So on the permanent absentee voting, Senate Bill 19 creates an option for permanent absentee voting for individuals that plan to vote by mail in every election. Right now, voters must fill out a formal application every year. And yes, that does apply to their primary election and also to the general election. But currently, Alaska has a permanent absentee voter list that's outside of, that's authorized by regulation, but not by statute. So in other words, that list is for those who are living in communities that there's no way you can vote in person, or people that live in places like senior homes. And as a matter of fact, many communities can only vote by mail, and those that are on the list don't automatically receive an absentee ballot. They actually have to get an application and fill that out every other year. So they automatically receive an application, but they don't automatically get the vote by mail. As mentioned before, currently 7 states allow permanent absentee voting. 8 states in the District of Columbia send vote by mail ballots to every registered voter. In New Mexico, legislation allowing permanent absentee voting is likely to pass this year. Their House Bill 4 passed the New Mexico House of Representatives, and now the New Mexico Senate will likely vote on the bill prior to the end of their session here on March 18th. And of course, ballot curing, we came up with a really good process over all the hearings that we had last year. Senate Bill 19 requires Alaska election officials to notify a voter if their absentee ballot is rejected. Currently, voters are notified after the election is certified. So you really no chance to cure your ballot. And we had over 7,500 ballots rejected in the 2022 special primary election to fill the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term, which is a 4.55% rejection rate. The special election was Alaska's first statewide by-mail election. Senate Bill 19 also requires Division of Elections to offer a voter the option to cure a mail ballot and absentee ballot if there are any errors. So ballot curing would apply to a vote by mail absentee ballots. Currently, 23 states do offer some form of ballot curing. Vermont implemented a ballot curing for the 2022 election, be one of the most recent ones. And let me share a story with you real quick. A friend of mine in the state of Washington who has really sloppy signature, and his mom always gave him a hard time about how sloppy his signature was. Well, there was a governor's race probably about 16, 18 years ago that came down to the absentee votes. And it was a very close election. He happened to be visiting Alaska when he got contacted by their voter system down there, their elections division, and they wanted to verify his signature. It was the one time that you really wanted to make sure his signature was readable. And so when he did that, his signature was different than how he normally signed his signature. So they actually had contacted him. He had to fly back down to Washington and verify his signature so his vote counted. And there was a friend of his who had never thought that it was important to vote. Ever since that she experienced that with him, she now drives people to the voter for voting each year during elections, because now she sees how important it is to vote. On the postage page envelopes, it does require the Division of Elections to provide a postage page return envelope with the absentee ballots, and it eliminates the need for people to try to come up with the stamps, especially in rural Alaska, when stamps may not be as available as it is in other areas. So just a real quick quote from Michael Garvey, who is an advocacy director for ACLU here in Alaska. People who vote in person are not required to present 58 cents when they fill out their ballot. Those who vote absentee should not be required to provide a stamp in order to exercise their rights. Prepaid postage for absentee ballots removes an unnecessary burden, especially for Alaskans who may not be able to readily purchase stamps because of the post office's closures or disability. And when we see one of the problems that we have in rural Alaska is just the weather. And oftentimes you will see that the post offices aren't open, really open as much as we see it in urban areas. And then of course, ballot tracking. I'm going to quote Thomas Hicks, who's chair of the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission. Transparency in elections is a priority, and officials regularly provide the public with opportunities observed throughout the process, from the testing of voting machines to the certification of results. And one of the things that I learned in studying the state of Colorado, in which Amber McReynolds was the elections director that implemented a lot of these procedures, is that 24/7, you can always see what's going on. You can go online and watch their elections process because they have live cameras happening all the time. So there is the transparency is there, and the faith in their election process is there. Hopefully someday we can get to that point here in Alaska. And to say that the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump, the truth is that the election process was fair and square. And the big lie does rely on unfounded claims of massive technological conspiracy to rig the 2020 elections. There hasn't been a shred of evidence. Trump's own lawyers have admitted that the big lie was propaganda. That was from Sidney Powell. And judges across the country ruled that Trump's unfunded claims of election fraud simply didn't happen. So the big election lie is also still alive here in Alaska. In 2021, the Daily News conducted an email survey of members of the Alaska State Legislature, and there wasn't a single Republican that was willing to say that President Joe Biden was legitimately elected. So one of the things that we can do right now is pass Senate Bill 19 to give that transparency, to give that voter access, and to get that ballot tracking going. We don't like to talk about voter suppression, but oftentimes what happens is legislatures don't want to make improvements to the elections process when you're bringing more people out to vote. In 2021, over 300 anti-voter bills were introduced in state legislatures across the country. The Heritage Foundation has been leading a massive campaign to draft and pass legislation restricting those voting access, and over 150 scholars and intellectuals published a statement of concern regarding the voter suppression efforts in state legislatures across the country. I do think that on a regular basis, we need to update our voting process to make sure that we're as transparent, as accessible as possible. So some of those voter suppression methods is restricting mail ballot drop boxes, preventing election officials from sending absentee ballot request forms to voters, making it easier for partisan workers to monitor the polls, preventing the collection of mail ballots, and restricting the ability of counties, to accept donations from nonprofit groups seeking to aid in election administration. So with that, I will conclude real quick and say with John Adams once said that where annual elections end, there slavery begins. So we just want to make sure that Alaskans are able to exercise their right to vote as freely as possible. And thank you for the opportunity to present.
Great. Thank you, Representative Chris Tuck. Are there any questions for the representative? Okay. You're a showstopper. I'll just say on behalf of the committee, thank you very much for your testimony today. And on behalf of my colleague, Senator Klayman, and I, we want you to move the van that's in our driveway.
I will be back soon with the news.
All right. Thank you very much.
I thought it left this morning.
We have some time left over for a brief introduction. Oh, actually, for now, I'll conclude invited testimony, and we will set this bill aside, and we will bring up the next bill, which is Senate Bill 1. I'll say that sorry to Senator Schauer, who is online, and sorry to Scott Ogan, who is here in the room with us right now. What we will do is we will get some brief initial introductions. We'll scan the sectional. We'll have some questions if there's any questions from here. We have one person who's on invited testimony who's been here since the very beginning of the meeting. We want to make sure that he is available to speak today to the committee. And then we will, whatever doesn't get done today, Mr. Ogan will bring back at the next meeting on Thursday at the very beginning before we set Senate Bill 1 aside. So with that, let's see. I do believe that Senator Mike Schauer is online and online with us this afternoon. Senator Schauer.
I am there. Can you hear me?
We sure can. I hope you're feeling better, and welcome to the Senate State Affairs Committee.
Thank you. Not great, so I'm going to limit my speaking time here. I guess it was my turn for the bug. That being said, I'll just go with a very brief intro. As you know, Mr. Chairman, Senator Schauer representing District O, and with Senate Bill 1, which is very similar to your bill in some ways. As former Representative Tuck mentioned, we had a very long process where we went through a bill from either side, both left and right, if you want to call it that, and we took our time to look at the areas where we could find agreement. We certainly don't agree on everything. You know, there's some nuances between your bill, Mr. Chairman, and ours, but there are a lot of things that are a lot of things that are very similar, and some things that I think everybody agrees are a step forward. I certainly hope that we can find a way, as we did last session, where down to the wire, as Representative Tuck said, we almost got it passed, but we failed at the last minute, and that was a true bipartisan effort. I was with three Democrats and myself as the lone Republican trying to get that through in the last hours of the session, and we didn't quite make it. So there are, without just based on my voice lasting, Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to say that, and not going through the entire sponsor statement, I don't want to read it. We really don't have time at this point, as you kind of illuminated before. But there are certainly some areas of agreement that I hope between yourselves, the other committees and the other body, that we can take a step forward. Because there are areas like over-registration that have been acknowledged that the state needs to do better. You know, things like ballot tracking, ballot curing. As you know, Mr. Chairman, I've been working on this just like Representative Tuck for years. The first bill I filed was in late 2019, you know, many years before the 2020 election, when, you know, the left was still upset about the 2016 results. And after 2020, the right's upset about the results. And as we have said, I want people's faith to be restored in the system, and we need to take steps to do that. It doesn't matter to me a whole lot about the partisan side of things, because it's always one side or the other that's upset when their person doesn't win. And unfortunately, it's become not only are they upset, but they claim fraud and stolen elections and all kinds of other things, when the real goal, I think, of our body ought to be to ensure that our system is as fair as we can make it, as tight as we can make it. Everybody that is eligible has a chance to vote, and we do our best to make sure that there cannot be fraud. And we have systems in place to catch that and make it as good as we can. And I think overall, that's all of our goal to do so. So with that, Mr. Chairman, rather than reading, and because I think my voice is up to give out here, I'm going to, I will of course entertain any questions, but I'm gonna defer to Mr. Ogan, Scott, to read the sectional analysis for time. And then, of course, the public testimony, and then with your allowing us to bring it back up, you know, at the next meeting or two, then we can certainly go through the rest of the questions on the bill and the differences. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Schauer. Are there any questions initially for Senator Schauer before we hand it over to Mr. Ogan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Ogan. I'm the Senior Policy Advisor to Senator Mike Schauer. You indicated earlier you wanted to scan the sectional analysis.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Ogan. Yeah, I think just for purposes of timing, what we'll do is if you could just scan high level over, and then whatever is not covered today, we'll cover at the very beginning of the next meeting that's scheduled for Thursday at 3:30, okay. And then we'll have enough time for Mr. Stalker, the person who's invited testimony on behalf of your office.
Right, thank you. Well, I'll try to summarize the sponsor statement. Senate Bill 1 was drafted to address concerns with the chain of custody of ballot security, reporting election offenses, preserving forensic integrity of ballots, multi-factor authentication, ballot curing, ballot tracking, cybersecurity, and legislative council's authority to contract with technical experts. Real briefly, there's been a lot of talk in here about the effort in the last 2 years, especially the last 2 years. It was a real bipartisan effort. We worked very closely with Representative Tuck's office and JKT's office as well. And our policy metric that I came up with that everybody agreed with was we want to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. And when it's easy to vote, it makes it easier to cheat. And when it's hard to vote, or when it's hard to cheat, it makes it harder to vote. So there's a lot of provisions that that people put in place that we want to encourage people to vote, make it super easy, you know, lower security bars and things like that. Mail-out balloting, for example, makes it super easy to vote. But there's a lot of ballots floating around there. We've heard testimony of people getting 5 ballots at their apartment for the last 5 people that live there. So what could go wrong? So we applied that metric to everything. We came up with actually a pretty good bipartisan approach. Ballot chain of custody is something I think that's not in your bill. I worked in in DNR, and we had a lot of chain of custody protocols. And those of you that are attorneys know about chain of custody with different evidence and things like that. People in law enforcement deal with it all the time. And so Alaska needs some serious chain of custody improvements to its system. This bill attempts to do that. There's no election offense hotline or person that's in charge of that. Preferably that would be possibly an AAG, but this bill envisions creating an election offense hotline that is manned during the election. And if there's people feel there's something that looks a little fishy, they can call it in and maybe it gets an AG referral. Multi-factor authentication is something that all of us use. I mean, you change your password on Facebook, you get a text to your cell phone that says, here's the code, was it you? Or there's all kinds of different modalities of that. The amount of multi-factor authentication apps online is staggering. And, we started working on election reform before it was cool. And now that it's pretty cool, there's been a lot of people who have done a lot of things, including multi-factor authentication for elections specifically, and that information is in your packet. It's a little bit different approach than signature verification. And I know the senators told me that both might work. You know, maybe we want to do both, but not everybody in Alaska is going to have cell phone access and be able to utilize some kind of a high-tech multi-factor authentication. But I think it's something that the committee should sincerely consider. We have ballot carrying provisions. I won't go over that. It's already been covered. Our bill requires the director to write and implement a cybersecurity plan. And one of the reasons multi-factor authentication is so important is that, to my knowledge, our election security has been hacked twice. That does not engender confidence and would probably further conspiracy theories and deniers that, and we actually had the director last year admit on record that it is plausible that someone with the information that's possibly in the dark web could hack, utilize those security identifiers that they have, vote for people that don't vote very often, and get away with a perfect crime. They didn't think it happened, but I'm not sure what kind of logic they used to do that, whether it was intuition or they just don't think it happened. But it's certainly, I think, a confidence factor with the voters. And lastly, but not least, this bill authorizes the legislative council to hire technical experts to conduct full forensic audits to verify the security of an election and lets them hire experts to look over these the process during and after. So That pretty much summarizes the whole bill, and I'd like to, unless there's questions, I'd like to defer to our testifier.
Great. Are there any questions of Mr. Ogin, Senator, or Senator Schauer before we go to invited testimony? Great. We just have enough time, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Schauer.
Oh, all right. Thank you, Senator. We now have invited testimony from Senator Schauer's office. It's Mr. Jim Stock. I just have a brief bio. Mr. Stock, you're a 50-year Alaska resident, self-employed the last 40, with citizen involvement on voting issues for some months. Do you are you online right now?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon. Jim Stocker, that's S-T-O-C-K-E-R, and I am representing myself. Pretty obvious here we're talking about SB1 being in the discussion, and I have briefly read over the sponsor statement and the bill itself, and I see this as a great start when it comes to laying groundwork to restore system integrity and voter confidence. I've had the opportunity over the past 7 months to be on the front lines testifying and talking to hundreds of people about the voting system here in Alaska. And I can tell you that the voter confidence is crashing. And the poll numbers at the last election reflect that. Currently, I'm involved with gathering signatures to turn around the ranked choice voting system. And or the late part of last year, I've spent quite a bit of time with a group of Valley residents in front of the Metsu Borough Assembly, where we eliminated the Dominion voting machines here in the Valley. The voters are, and I've talked to hundreds of voters in the last few weeks gathering signatures. Myself, I've gathered over 600 signatures, and we have them now in the thousands. The steady flow of people to sign these books is absolutely, it's overwhelming. And I can only say that until we restore this voter integrity, we're going to continue to lose voters. I talk to these people, like I said, I'm talking to them all the time, and we have four major issues that people are concerned about. Number one, of course, is ranked choice. They want to get rid of that. The Dominion voting machines across the state, they want to get rid of those. And they're also very concerned about why it takes 3 weeks to count votes and also voter rolls. They seem to be a mess. They were hacked. Somebody has the rolls, and it needs to be cleaned up. And along with that, people are very concerned and very perplexed as to why we have what's known as the ERIC system. It seems to be a complete and total failure, and it's just been brought to my attention that a lot of states, including Missouri, Florida, and Virginia, have just recently announced they're pulling out in the last few days. So those are pretty much touching on the subjects and where I'm at and what I've been getting from voters and where their voter sentiment is. I can go into a lot greater details. I have a lot of information, and I've talked to a lot of experts and a lot of IT experts. I think this is a little bit more complicated and deeper than any of us really ever imagined, except for, of course, some people. But with that said, I guess I could go on forever. I can be really long-winded, but perhaps maybe I can answer some questions if anybody has any.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Stocker, for your testimony today. Are there any questions of Mr. Stocker? We have Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Stocker, for joining us today. Could you tell us a little bit about what the ERIC system is, please?
Sure. The ERIC system this stands for the Electronic Registration Information Center. And the objective of it is to improve voter registration accuracy. And it's obvious when we have numbers that don't match up, it doesn't improve accuracy. And even President Trump has just asked all GOP governors to get rid of the system. I would encourage anyone who's interested in this to look at it under a microscope. I would encourage you to look and see who founded it, who funded it, and how efficient the system actually is. From what I understand, and if I were to just make a statement based on pure conjecture, I would say that this system is I'm just going to say it's criminal. And we should get out of it. And that's why other states are pulling out of it. But that's pretty much what the just a brief overview of what the ERIC system is.
Follow-up?
Follow-up, Senator Bjorkman.
Is it your understanding, Mr. Stocker, that the ERIC system is a way that states track if people are registered in a different state other than their own, and then they remove them from the voter rolls?
That's their objective, but that's not working. And the ERIC system is employed or is integrated into other states. I think it's up to the states whether they decide whether they want to get into the ERIC system or not. But the ERIC system seems to be failing miserably. I believe we have more people on the voter rolls than we have registered voters, or I should say we have more ballots or something of that nature. So we're not, things aren't matching up, and it appears to be that way across the states and across the board. And again, I would encourage you to take a deep look at it. I'm certainly not an expert on the ERIC system. You know, I'm just an individual who works, you know, 40 to 60 hours a week. And this is just something that I'm really taking an interest on the side.
Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Stocker, is there a timeline that states have to follow before they remove someone if they are not found to be registered in another state?
That is a question I cannot answer. I cannot answer that question. I don't know.
So if the ERIC system were to find someone that's registered in another state, it would be interesting to know if that would speed the process up by which the state could remove them from their roles.
Well,
thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Stocker. Are there any other questions for Mr. Stocker? Okay, seeing none, Mr. Rogan, did you have a comment?
Question through the chair, members of the committee. The ERIC system is not a 50-state system. I think it's around 30 states, plus or minus. And so it leaves a lot of people off the table. And what it does is it cross-checks to whether or not they're registered in another state. And there are some best practices that the Public Interest Legal Foundation has come up with that's more of a 50-state solution and uses a lot more databases. And I think one of the things – it's not in this bill. It's actually another bill we have to update voter rolls, there's a lot of things that we can do, but I'll save the discussion for later.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Schauer, can I comment to that, please?
Oh, yeah. Senator Schauer, please.
Thank you. Through the chair, just very briefly on ERIC and a comment, and I can close up if you'd like, Mr. Chairman. I know time's about out. The ERIC system, the primary problem we have is that there was twofold. The National Voting Rights Act of 1964, it's required us to violate that federal law. There's actually an active lawsuit against the state because of it, because a private entity, which is ERIC system, it's not a government entity, and we have zero oversight from the state government on it, and it's put us into a lawsuit. So the lack of oversight and the violation of federal law and how that's kind of played out was really what drove us to want to get out of the ERIC system. In addition to, as Scott said, it was 31 states. Apparently it's less. I did not know that. And it misses nearly half the nation as far as doing that. And we discovered we had at least 12 government-controlled different databases we could use that were much more accurate. Excuse me. And last point, Mr. Chairman, and I'll finish for time. I just wanted to say that based on the fraud claims that people make, and I already see the ADN posting things about election deniers, I'm like, here we go with the narrative again. But the reality is one of the problems, as you know, Mr. Chairman, because you and I were on this committee going through the bills the last couple of years, is we have never done a true forensic or risk-limiting audit. So we don't know, as Mr. Ogum was mentioning, if there was any. I've never claimed there was. We don't know. Nobody can say there wasn't, because we've never run the audit. We just simply counted the number of ballots to make sure they matched, you know, the number of paper ballots. But we didn't go after the data hack to see if anybody that was in the data hack, if their ballot was, if they haven't voted in 10 years, did they vote? There's just a lot of things that were questions. So I circle back, Mr. Chairman, to finish to say that I think our goal is we can simply do better. I think we all recognize we have some issues, and I think we can take a step forward, and I hope that we'll be able to get there And I know time is tight, we're over, so thank you for letting me finish up. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you, Senator Schauer. We do have two last questions before we finish up today. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we're running out of time, but is the division appearing before us again on Thursday?
Yes, the Division of Elections will be here on Thursday. I think there will be several folks, including the Operations Manager, Carol Thompson, Administrative Operations Manager, Michaela Thompson. We probably have somebody from Department of Law, and, of course, we will have Ms. Beecher, Director.
Okay, just, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator Wilikowski.
I know there are a lot of people in the state, in the country, who have concerns about these issues. I know we worked with Senator Schauer's office last year. I think we came up with a pretty good bill. Unfortunately, didn't get across the finish line. But I'd be interested in hearing from the division next Thursday, the next time we meet, about the issues that we've heard. Because there are a lot of people who are concerned about these issues, the issues of having more voters than people in the state, the issues of the Dominion election system. And some of the other issues that have been brought up. I'd be very interested in hearing from the division about whether or not these are issues that we should be looking into. Because if they are, I don't want more people voting in the state. Nobody does than actually live in the state. If we've got a fraudulent election system, we need to get rid of it. We need to scrap it and get a new one. So I'd like to hear from the division on Thursday whether or not these claims that are being made are accurate. And if they are, then we need to fix them. And if they're not, then we need to let the public know that these are inaccurate claims. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just briefly to Senator Schauer, I appreciate you being here and bringing this bill forward. My question is, what is a forensic audit and how is it different than a regular audit?
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Merrick. There's the real word, as I was informed, because I made the same mistake of always saying forensic, and some accountants and others told me that is not correct. That's a CPA or a money type audit. The right term is risk limiting audit, where what you do is you look into the system and see, you know, was the person eligible to vote? Have they voted X number of years? Is their address on file correct? There's markers that you would look at in that risk limiting audit to ensure that that person was eligible, registered, appropriate, allowed to vote, et cetera, and everything was, you know, above board. If you do what the former lieutenant governor had done on ballot measure 2, just as an example, where he was saying the word was also incorrect, he was saying, well, we did an audit. All they did was they pulled out the number of ballots that were counted. This was for ballot measure 2 in 2020. And what they did was they just made sure they basically hand counted the number of ballots, matched the number of ballots that went into the machine and came out. They hand counted and said, yep, pretty close, we're good. Which is why I highlight that point, that risk-limiting audit goes beyond that, and that's what we've never done. So when people say, as Mr. Ogun pointed out, well, we don't know, or we're sure there was no fraud, and I've never claimed there was, I'm only saying this is their words, we can't say that because we never did a true risk-limiting audit. We never actually looked at the data hack, the 113,000 Alaskans information to see of those that voted, were they legitimate? If they hadn't voted in 10 or 12 years or ever, did they suddenly vote? Those are the kind of questions a risk-limiting audit would look at, as opposed to a forensic audit. And I think that's just a little bit of apples to oranges on terminology. I'm not an English major, Senator Merrick, but that's how it was explained to me. But it was what was made clear is we've never actually done a risk-limiting audit. What most of us would think a forensic audit is electronically to go into the system and look downstream on each voter to make sure that everything was above board. Does that make sense and answer your question?
Yes, thank you, Senator Schauer.
Yep, we'll wrap it up here with Mr. Ogun.
Just a quick statement. In the back of your packet, there's an insert, de-weaponizing and standardizing the post-election audit. It's a pretty good, I think, balanced paper. It talks about a lot of the problems with some of the audits that haven't really produced any really good fruit, and I think it's kind of sets the bar on what the audit should be and what protocols should be to have credible audits. If some of these audits that people are running around with their hair on fire about were credible, then they would get traction in court, right? So they haven't. So this is a pretty good document, and it's pretty nonpartisan.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Ogun, and thank you for all the folks who were here and available to testify and invited testimony, as well as folks presenting the bills today. This is a process. This is the first hearing of two bills, very large bills. We're going to take them piece by piece at a future meeting, but we wanted to have that briefing at this point. We will have our next meeting scheduled for Thursday, March 9th. During that meeting, we will see if there's any follow-up on Senate Bill 1 before we set it aside. We will have Director Carol Beecher from the Division of Elections. Thank you for being here today to discuss some election reforms, maybe some of the questions that have popped up today. My office has also requested that you get any questions that you may have for her so that she'll know to follow up with us on Thursday. We want to have those questions by Wednesday, close of business. With that, we will thank everybody for being here. Thank you for being a couple minutes late. And also during the meeting, sorry, I need to announce that we will hold a hearing and we will try to move out Senate Joint Resolution number 6 by Representative Tobin relating to the Alaska-Korea relationship. And with that, time is now 5:07 and Senate State Affairs Committee is adjourned.